Hare Krishna. Good morning. We're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31, text number 4. Narayanam namaskritam naram caiva narottamam devim sarastim vyasam Tato jaya mudirayat nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityang bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yutama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Tam Agatam Ta Putaya Prani Patya Binandya cha pujayitva yatadesham sukashinam atabruvan tam agatam ta utaya pranipatya binandya cha Pujayitva yitadesham Sukhasinam atabruvan Tam to him Agatam appeared Te all the prachetas Utaya after getting up Pranipatya, offering obeisance. Abhinandya, offering welcome. Cha, also. Pujayitva, worshipping. Yata adesham, according to regulative principles. Sukha asinam, comfortably situated. Atha, thus. Abruvan, they said. Translation. As soon as the prachetas saw that the great sage Narada had appeared, they immediately got up, even from their asanas. As required, they immediately offered obeisances and worshipped him. And when they saw that Narada Muni was properly seated, they began to ask him questions. Please repeat. As soon as the prachetas saw the great sage Narada, had appeared. They immediately got up from their asanas, as required, offered obeisances, and worshipped him. And when they saw that Narada Muni was properly seated, they began to ask him questions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is significant that all the prachetas were engaged in practicing yoga to concentrate their minds on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. End of purport. It's a long one. Omagyana Timarandasa Jananan Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshulumilitang Jaila Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha Panchakalpataruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tamagatam Tu Uthaya Pranipatya Binanjacha Puja Yitva Yata Desham Sukhasina Mata Bruvam. As soon as the Prachetas saw that the great sage Narada had appeared, they immediately got up, even from their asanas. As required, they immediately offered obeisances and worshipped him. And when they saw that Narada Muni was properly seated, they began to ask him questions. This is the purport. I'm sorry it was so long, you missed a lot of it. It is significant that all the Prachetas were engaged in practicing yoga to concentrate their minds on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Probably wondering how this purport relates to the verse. It's interesting because have you ever noticed when you're giving class, Maharaj, you prepare it, and then when you read the verse in the purport, you always notice something else? Perhaps you... Yeah. It's interesting how there's quite a sequence of... there's a procedure here for receiving a great person, such as Narada Muni. They saw that he appeared. Immediately, they get up. Immediately is interesting. No hesitation. They stood up. They were sitting, so immediately they stood up. Previously, when I was at school, we had to stand when the teacher entered the classroom. Some of us have experience. Now I think it's not really politically correct. But that was the system, the etiquette, yeah. Good manners. You can still get books on etiquette, I think. A little old-fashioned these days. But it's there. Very important principle. Then they offered obeisances, and then they offered puja, pujayitva. And then once they'd seen he was properly seated, that means they offered him a seat. And once he was seated, then they began to ask questions. So there's a whole procedure, and it I think it's mentioned here. As required, they immediately... It suggests this was required. It is etiquette. It is standard. But what is interesting here is that even though the Prachetas were engaged in the practice of yoga, still, they performed activities which appear to resemble bhakti. There is some devotion there. So by yoga, there's generally kind of two kind of meanings in one sense. Of course, yoga means, there's an English word yoke, which we use when we join bullocks. We yoke the bullocks. If we have bullocks to pull the plow or the cart, in Bhaktivedanta manner, they have a lot of bullocks and they pull the... There's a cart that pulls all the school children and other visitors around. So when you join the bullocks up, it's called to yoke the bullocks. So the word yoke comes apparently from the Sanskrit yoga, meaning to join. So the word yoga actually literally means union or to join. But it has two main senses beyond that. One is that it refers to four particular paths or practices. Sometimes they say three, sometimes four, and there are many others as well. This is the Vedic tradition. It's hard to categorize. So those three yogas are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. And sometimes a fourth yoga, or often a fourth yoga, is inserted between, at least according to our tradition, between Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, and that is Ashtanga Yoga. Some traditions will give other orders for various reasons we'll come to, but if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, that's generally the order it goes in the first six chapters of the Gita. First six chapters of the Gita, what's it about? We're probably all familiar. Srila Prabhupada explains in one place that the first six chapters of the Gita describe various types of yoga by which the self can link with the Supreme, culminating in Bhakti Yoga. Very succinct, probably gives a very succinct overview of the first six chapters of the Gita. So it's interesting. There are those three or four yogas, but yoga here specifically means one of those, and that is the Ashtanga Yoga system, Patanjali Yoga. So here they were engaged in Patanjali Yoga, not Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, but Ashtanga Yoga. And what's interesting is actually there is some element. It'd be interesting, how do we understand these different yogas? What's the relationship between them? How is this relevant to us? These are some important questions we could ask here. It's interesting that here there seems to be an element of bhakti, even, in the way that these yogis are treating Narada Muni. And actually, there are eight limbs of yoga: yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Samadhi is the final goal, which means fixed mind, when the mind is fixed on the Lord within the heart, unshakably. That's unusual, isn't it? Most of the time the mind is somehow distracted by the things of this world. But samadhi means completely fixed mind, unshakable. That's the goal, but it begins with yama and niyama. Yama means do nots, restrictions. And niyama means the opposite, positive things that the yogi does, or moral, positive moral observances. The five yamas are non-violence, ahimsa, asteya. Actually, yeah, sometimes they're referred to as not. So ahimsa means non-violence. Satya means not telling lies. Who's not told a lie? Anyone? No, I was asking you. Don't talk about Maharaj Yudhisthira. I was asking you. Asteya, not stealing or not cheating. Brahmacharya, continence, no sex. And aparigraha, non-coveting. Coveting, that's you want what someone else has got. Isn't it one of the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife or his ass. Something like that. Sorry, I didn't want to compare his wife to an ass. But I mean, but there was, isn't it one of the, is it or not? Not covet his wife, and not, there's two. Okay. And his possessions. But two regarding covetousness. Yeah. Even it says here, no envy, jealousy, or unhealthy competitiveness. The yamas, things we should do, purity, socham, that means cleanliness, internal and external, contentment, santosha, one practices contentment, being content in any circumstance, discipline, tapa, austerity. Svadhyaya means study of the self, reflection on the self. I was reading on one website that, let me read what it says there. Unfortunately, yoga has become a little watered down these days. This may be an attempt to make it accessible. About Svadhyaya, many people enjoy activities which are meditative for them. Running, knitting, hiking, playing music, sketching, and gardening. Okay, we're trying to make it accessible, but that's not quite what Svadhyaya means. It really means asking, who am I? Analyzing the self, Atato Brahma Jigyasu. So, yeah, it begins with Brahman, not with knitting. Anyway, at least there's some understanding of contemplation and so on. And I haven't put them necessarily in order, but an interesting one, the one relevant here, is Ishvara Pranidhana. Ishvara Pranidhana. On a similar website, someone had translated that as eagerness, or ardor was the word, or zeal. We talk about religious zeal, someone's eager. It was translated as ardor, but it's quite clearly there. Ishvara Pranidhana. Ishvara means God. Two words in Sanskrit, Bhagavan or Ishvara, means the Lord or God. So it means actually eagerness for the Lord, or sometimes it's translated as worship of the Lord. So even in this Ashtanga yogic system, there is some element of bhakti. And we'll find that in all the different yogas. Karma yoga, aimed at enjoying the world, there was also a concept of God. Generally speaking, the concept of God was it's very much associated with the Karma Mimamsa system. When yajna was offered, and that concept of God is rather like some call it polytheistic, but it's when the One Supreme is worshipped in many forms. It's mentioned in the Gita somewhere. I can't remember the verse, how there are various stages of understanding God before one actually becomes a monist as such. I can't remember what they are. I wonder if anyone remembers what they are. One is the universal form. One is pantheism, I think, seeing God everywhere. And the other is worshipping many deities as representatives of the One Supreme, I think. Or universal form. One is the universal form. Do you know the verse, Maharaj? Ah, that's the one. Yeah. Which chapter is it? Do you know? No, don't. Sorry, I shouldn't ask. It's interesting. These yogas, actually, there are various also concepts of God there. And there's a progression there. So karma, there is an element of, there's an understanding of the Supreme. Karma yoga. Yajnanat karma nonyatra loko yang karma bandana tadatang karma kantiya mukta sangha samacha. The third chapter of the Gita is dedicated to this. Srila Prabhupada explains that the word yajna, which means sacrifice, ultimately also means Vishnu. So that there is an idea that even the karma yoga is ultimately aimed at yajna Vishnu. So there is a concept there. And Krishna says also in the third chapter, yad karoshi yad nashi. Yad jahoshi tadasi yat yat tapasisi kantaya tad kurishva madarpanam. Whatever you do it for me. Thank you. Thanks, Maharaj. Yagya yagyena chapyanye yajanto mam apasate ekatvena pratyaktvena bahuda vishvato mukam. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge, worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. Knowledge is mentioned, but also yajna. Actually, the term is jnana, yajna, sacrifice of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport four types of bhaktas. You know those, I won't go into those, but four types of people approach Krishna in bhakti yoga. But there are others who are still lower, and these are divided into three. One, he who worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord. That's monism, I think. Two, he who concocts some form of the Supreme Lord and worships that. He understands the Supreme Lord, but somehow concocts something. And three, he who accepts the universal form, the Vishwarupa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and worships that. I won't continue with that, but it's an interesting verse regarding different understandings of the Supreme. Karma yogis, jnana yogis, and jnana, how is that connected to bhakti? Actually, even the jnanis are expected to show humility. Without humility, one cannot practice the process of jnana. And again, what is the object of knowledge? Atato brahma jigyaso. It is Brahman. And then that Brahman is described, that absolute truth is described. Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam udvayam brahmeti paramadmeti bhagavaniti shabhyate. So the beginning is to understand Brahman, or the interesting verse, the non-dual substance. This is a fantastic verse. Here's a non-dual substance. There's no duality. It's one. And yet there are three parts to this non-dual substance. Very important verse, this. Yeah. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So the jnani tends to understand himself as the divine Brahman. That's the Brahman understanding. The yogi meditates on Paramatmeti, the Lord within, and the Bhakta worships Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, who's beyond this world. So the object of meditation is also, it's mentioned in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam by Suta Goswami. Jana vashtita tad gitena manasa pasyanti yang yoginaho. When the perfected yogis see within their minds, after fixing themselves in trance and absorbing themselves with Him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is much evidence that actually the focus of worship, Astanga Yoga, is Krishna. So actually you'll find even in karma, in jnana, and in the yoga, Astanga Yoga system, there are elements of bhakti. Now what is really interesting is that we find in bhakti, there are elements of the four other processes as well. We work for Krishna. Actually, Srila Prabhupada didn't define bhakti, as many do, as devotion, a feeling, an emotion. He defined it as devotional service. It's active. So we work for Krishna. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam class and we try to understand, or we try to make it understandable. We meditate during the japa period. Even as the pujari is offering worship, which is a part of bhakti, he or she is actually meditating on the form of the Supreme Lord. So it seems somewhat confusing. I mean, how are these four paths related? What is the exact relationship between these different types of yoga? There are two main answers. One is related to a mountain, and the other is to a ladder. And the analogy given by many is that there are many paths up a mountain, but they all reach the top. And whichever path you take is merely a matter of choice or determined by one's own predisposition or tendency towards a particular path. Now, this is particularly favored by the Gyanis, who say that we bhaktas are sentimental. And a lot of us are. But actually, real bhakti is not merely sentimental. That is generally the Kanishtha platform. Yatapat, yatamat tatapat was Ramakrishna's famous saying. Whatever you choose, or whatever your mind, literally, that is the path. Kind of total relativistic doctrine. The second one is the ladder, by which one yoga is the bottom rung, another yoga is the next rung, and so on. And there is a top rung, more elitist rather than relativistic. However, we favor the ladder to some degree, but that should not be misunderstood. It is not simply that we kick the lower rungs completely away, or we kick the ladder away. Shakespeare alludes to this phenomenon. He says, but 'tis a common proof, by proof he means experience, that lowliness or humility is young ambition's ladder. Whereto the climber upward turns his face, but once he attains the utmost round, the top rung, when he attains the top rung, then unto the ladder he turns his back, looks in the clouds, and scorns the base degrees, or the lower steps, by which he did ascend. Srila Prabhupada gives the example for the Gyanis, of course, that they have this idea of bhakti, worship of the guru, but then once they've reached their godhood, they kick away the ladder and they kick away the guru, because they've become God. So Srila Prabhupada uses that to criticize the Gyanis, but it's interesting to see whether are we also, as bhaktas, kicking away the lower steps at some stage? In other words, what's the relationship between karma and bhakti, jnana and bhakti, yoga and bhakti? Do we simply become absorbed in feeling? Is that the goal? It's interesting. It's an interesting topic, but there are two considerations here, and perhaps we need to differentiate between them, and that is between the process and between the results. Certainly the results of karma, dhyana and bhakti and yoga are available to the bhakta. What's the results of karma yoga? What are they aiming for? Yes, material enjoyment, particularly the heavenly planets. That was the purpose of yajna. And that's why you had a putra, a son. Putra means someone who can deliver you from hell. Putra, mantra. Deliver, tra, pu, hell, man, mind. So mantra, putra, similar words. Tra, they deliver. Putra means one who delivers from hell. Not only delivers from hell by performing the Shraddha ceremonies and similar ceremonies, but if the son and the other relatives carry on performing this these sacrifices by going to Gaia, if they keep on doing that and kind of investing in your karma bank account, you can stay in heaven for a long time. But of course, you know, as soon as they stop that, pasyanti, one falls down again. Oh. That's the idea. So actually any system of religion that's aimed at material enjoyment in this world, and correctly so in the next, is karma yoga. What's the result of jnana yoga? What's the benefit? What's the fruit? Mukti is, yeah, they try to achieve mukti, but there's another one I'm thinking of that's mentioned as well. Yeah, one result is mukti. You're right, actually. Absolutely. There's another one. Mukti is one. Does the bhakti get mukti? Yes. It stands like his maid servant. I am your servant. What's another result of jnana? Knowledge. Knowledge. And what's the goal of, or the fruit of, yoga? Yeah, mystic powers are one. That's true. Although it actually Patanjali warns warns against that as being a goal. He says it's a result, but he warns against the yogi being actually thinking that is the goal. Vairagya. Jnana and vairagya relate to the process of jnana and the process of Ashtanga yoga. Jnana and detachment is the result. Jnana and vairagya. So the results come, but the process may be different. We have to be therefore very careful, because if we make the claim that only bhakti, and it's not an unfounded claim, that bhakti is the only valid process, and there are some who criticize, for example, Bhaktivedanta College as being too much inclined towards jnana. But if you claim that bhakti is the only thing, then the question is, do you have jnana and do you have vairagya? Because if you have bhakti, you must also have jnana and vairagya. They're natural results. But what about the process? Even the processes seem to involve the other paths to some degree. So when we're listening to class, are we practicing jnana yoga or bhakti yoga? And what's the difference? When we're doing our rounds, how is it different from doing ashtanga yoga or doing my knitting or whatever? Two points, two features may be important. One is the focus of karma, jnana, and yoga is the Supreme Lord. Our activities are performed for the Lord. Our knowledge is about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And our yoga, our meditation is on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the difference. There's a second feature. The attitude changes. There's a change in attitude. The change of attitude is that we're no longer interested in karma. That means enjoying and accepting. Nor interested in vairagya, renunciation. Therefore, Rupa Goswami clearly says, what's that verse? Anukulyena. Yanavritam. Yeah. Giving up. He says that we have to give up karma and jnana. But in that sense, it means that the attitude that I want to enjoy the fruits of my activities are to be given up. And the attitude that I somehow can renounce something is to be given up. They're equally foolish. I'm trying to enjoy something. It's mine. I have an apartment. Everything is in there is mine, or my wife's. Who says? It can go at any moment. But similarly, if I walk past the Dexia Bank in Bhavao, and I'm walking with you, Maharaj, and we're going on a walk, a nice sunny day, and I say, Maharaj, see that bank? I give it to you. I renounce it. You'll think Rasamanda is mad. And you would be right. So actually, as soon as we have the idea of renouncing, it actually indicates, this person is actually thinking still that I have something to renounce. Therefore, he thinks he's a jnani, but he's also a kami. The two exist simultaneously, like two sides of the same coin. Therefore, the attitude is there. I have nothing to accept and nothing to renounce. I do everything for Krishna, and I accept things for Krishna when he wants me to accept them. Yukta vairagya. It is resolved, that tension. These two tensions are there in human life. By the way, today is Shivaratri, Mahashivaratri, the marriage of Shiva and Parvati. And Shiva somehow embodies these two tendencies for enjoyment and for renunciation. He's Mahayogi, the greatest yogi. He's shown in the Himalayas meditating in the freezing cold. But he's also shown, some of us are feeling cold now, I can see. But he's also shown with his wife, Parvati, with his two sons, Ganesh and Skanda, as a happy householder. So people can't fathom out who Lord Shiva is. But he represents those two sides, the desire to renounce and the desire to accept. And bhakti resolves those. It actually accommodates both of those. We must finish. I will read a quote. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practice lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti and bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, this stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the supersoul by different physical processes and the mind is on him, it is called astanga yoga. And when one surpasses the astanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it is called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Factually, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand the other yogas. Prabhupada says one has to understand the other yogas. Interesting. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or jnana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of the Himalayas, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak is Mount Everest, and it is considered to be the culmination. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga. to become well situated according to the Vedic direction, the ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Syama Sundara, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower-garlanded. Illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma Jyoti. He incarnates in different forms, such as Ram, Narasimha, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yashoda, and he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudev. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master. And he is full with all opulence and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. However, we should not think that we have transcended some of the practices of etiquette, just as offering respect to great devotees. That is also part of the process. Nor should we think that I should no longer do something for Krishna, try to understand Krishna, and meditate on the Supreme Person also. Questions? Unless you think they're part of Jnana Yoga? Mataji? Yeah, they should meditate on Vishnu in the heart. Not all of the yogis meditate on Vishnu. Ultimately, it is the goal. That is the real goal. But not all yogis meditate on. The goal, according to Patanjali, is Kaivalya, understanding oneness, understanding the discerning. It's similar to Jnana Yoga, discerning the self from the body. It's aimed at discrimination. Yes, ultimately that is what real Astanga Yoga is, but not all Astanga Yogis understand that. And it may be that if the yogi doesn't understand, but he or she is progressive, then that's fine. So there's some accommodation there. Even if a yogi doesn't understand initially that Krishna is the object of yoga, still if he continues or she continues, they will come to that platform. So really, each of the yogas ultimately means bhakti. So karma yoga reaches its perfection in bhakti. Jnana yoga reaches its perfection in knowing Krishna. And Astanga reaches its perfection in meditating on the Supreme Lord. But not all may start understanding with that full knowledge. I don't know. There are various forms they may meditate on. I don't actually know. Does anyone know what yogis meditate on? Well, some people do practice that these days, certainly. Does anyone know any real yogis? Not just people who knit or run or... I don't know what they some may worship other deities also. I mean, Lord Shiva is a favorite of the yogis. Whether they meditate on, I'm so sure some of them would meditate on the form of Lord Shiva as well. That's a fact. Maybe other deities. The first five steps are called external sadhana, and the last three steps, beginning with dharana, concentration, then meditation, and samadhi, internal sadhana. So then there must be some focus. They may meditate on the self, also the individual self. And Srila Prabhupada mentions they may mistake the individual self for the super self. So they may also start meditating on their own self. But certainly, you know, these are not, in a sense, those paths should always be focusing on Krishna. But those paths where Krishna is not the object are not necessarily rejected, providing the practitioner eventually comes to that understanding. See how very accommodating our Vedic tradition is. It tends not to condemn those who are on the lower rungs. We must be very careful not to condemn, because if they're encouraged and they're given the right association and the right knowledge, they can come up to the higher rungs. Therefore, if we find someone knitting and thinking it's yoga, we shouldn't necessarily condemn them. The question is, can we actually make them understand there are better forms of contemplation, or svadhyaya, as it was used, right? That's the real question. I'll give you an example, just to finish, that once I was as the treasurer in Soho Street Temple, when I was there, we had two preaching programs every day, and we had about, in some, 120 visitors every day. It was very, as we say in ISKCON, fired up. And once some devotees came up to my room in the treasury and said, "Rasamandala, there's a bit of a problem downstairs, an argument going on, there's a couple of guys saying they're God." They actually turned out to be actors. They were both from, they worked on Shaftesbury Avenue, actually professionals. I went and I actually bowed down to them. And I spoke to them, and I actually said, "Yes, we are God. You're right. We're God in quality, but we're not God in quantity. In fact, a better word would be godly." The surprising thing was they agreed. They understood. So we need to be very, very careful about condemning people. We should see what is the good, and then fan that spark. Don't extinguish it. Don't pour water on it. Don't pour cold water on it. Don't assume that every impersonalist is a rampant, envious Mayavadi. I've met those who are envious of God, and when they're told about God, they become very uncomfortable. I've met that they do exist. But by large, many of the impersonalists will actually not reject the form of Krishna. So we can accept achinta bheda bheda tattva, we are the same as God. We accept monism, not undifferentiated monism, but we accept we're the same in quality. That's just one example. So we need to be very, very sensitive in our preaching. We don't compromise and saying, "Yes, it's okay, you carry on knitting and you'll attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead," unless you're knitting a scarf for Radha Gopinath. We may have to point out there is some room for improvement. But the point is, we should be very careful about condemning, because that may not help. So these yogas, so it's very accommodating. Krishna says, okay, you're interested in spirituality, you're trying to understand the self, you may not yet understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but you carry on, and if you're progressive, then you will understand that. And this is the process of yoga. Very accommodating. We don't condemn. Does that help? Quickly, 1 minute we go. I don't know. I can check it out and get back to you on that. Do you know, Marsh? Two thousand years ago, so about the beginning of the.
Because I was wondering, because
Yeah, Sankirtan is the process. But still, if we get people who are interested in yoga, just get them to relax, look at their nose, do whatever you've got to do, and then let them mantra yoga, and then let them chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Why not? And, you know, so all these things. If people are interested in selfless service, then actually let you know, engage them in selfless service. If they're interested in knowledge, then we have to actually somehow practically convince them that this is fantastic knowledge. And if we actually, they're interested in yoga, then let's enhance their yoga practice by making Krishna the object of their meditation. Yeah, I'm not sure why he appeared and what his purpose was if he came in Kali Yuga. But still, we can at least, you know, we could speculate on that. But still, there are people there, they're interested in yoga. And therefore, they may actually. So we should not condemn these other yogis. They're a purpose, because they may be a way in. And maybe that's the way, I don't know. Patanjali came. There are people who are not interested in Krishna and bhakti, but actually if they take to some process, by that purification the heart will change. By that change of heart, one will be able to accept Krishna. So there's a gradual purification. So if a person's practicing yoga, they're practicing some kind of these yama and niyama, then, you know, gradually by carrying on, Krishna will be revealed to them. Mm-hmm. Particularly through the grace of a devotee. And therefore, as devotees, we should be careful not to condemn those who are interested in spiritual life and the different processes. But somehow we need to practically demonstrate that actually bhakti yoga enhances all those processes. Because really, karma yoga is bhakti yoga. Jnana yoga is bhakti yoga. That's the fulfillment. It is the fulfillment of karma. Bhakti yoga is the fulfillment of all those yogas, the perfection of all of those. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, kaur premanandi. Yeah.